Mercy is what you give to others with the hope that it'll come back to you. It's what you give to people who don't deserve it. It's what you give to people who haven't asked for it. It's what you give and hope
that it'll come back. That's an aha. You give it to people who don't deserve it. That's why it's mercy.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
That's why we say, Lord, have mercy.
Absolutely.
On me.
That's right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And justice is?
You know, justice is a constant struggle. You know, it's what we need to respond to so many of our problems. You know, I tell people all the time, I don't believe that the opposite of poverty is wealth. I think we talk too much about money. I think the opposite of poverty is justice. It's the way we relate to one another. If we create conditions that allow us to be more honest and fair and just, that's how we deconstruct poverty.
Wow. You knew early on that this was your calling, working with the condemned. Do you think it's God's work?
I certainly feel the pleasure of God in this work. I feel the hope of God. I feel the love of God in standing next to people who have been disfavored, who've been rejected, who've been condemned. You know, I really do think that you measure sometimes your spirituality. You measure the health of your soul, not by how you treat people who are rich and famous and privileged. I think you measure the health of your soul by how you treat the poor, the incarcerated, and the condemned. So I actually feel privileged to be able to stand next to condemned people, to serve the condemned, to serve the incarcerated, to serve the discarded and disfavored, because it's in that service that I feel the power of God most intensely.
Really?
That's where I feel the hope.
Finish his sentence. I believe.
I believe we're more than the worst thing we've ever done. I believe that grace is power. I believe that love is justice. And I believe that we have to judge how we're doing by how we treat the poor, the incarcerated, and the condemned.
Thank you.
You're very, very welcome.
So
what a privilege to talk to you. You're
That's
so
a prayer.
Wonderful.
That's a prayer. That's a prayer offering you just gave us. Thank you for that.
Chapter 7, Broken Open. There's not one experience, no matter how devastating, no matter how torturous it may appear to have been, there is nothing that is ever wasted. Everything that is happening to you is being drawn into your life as a means to help you evolve into what you are really meant to be here on earth. It's not the thing that matters, it's what that thing opens within you. One of my favorite questions to ask on Super Soul is, what is the lesson that took you the longest to learn? The responses are always thoughtful, unique, and deeply personal. My own answer to that question has taken a lifetime to learn. I've struggled with my weight for much of my adult life, and I now realize I've been lying to myself about it for just as long. Lying is something I abhor, and lying to yourself is the worst. In the deepest part of myself, I think I always knew that I was using food to repress my feelings. Any hint of discomfort or agitation that could lead to confrontation or rejection or anyone being upset with me would cause me to eat. And after talking to so many people on The Oprah Winfrey Show and Super Soul Sunday, I knew my emotional eating stemmed from a childhood spent getting punished for expressing my feelings. After a few whippings, as they were called in my day, I learned quickly how to push my emotions down. I understood, even as a 6-year-old and a 5-year-old and a 4-year-old, that my feelings would not be validated. So even though I knew the root of my weight issues, I only recently discovered how to fix them. As a spiritual seeker, I understand that this journey requires you to not only embrace all that is whole and good in your life, but also to continually examine the long-buried wounds hidden beneath your carefully crafted surface. This is what I mean when I say, turn your wounds into wisdom. It turns out, when it comes to my issues with weight, I needed to take a bit of my own advice. Despite the freedom I felt in forgiving those who hurt me in the past, it's taken me years and many Super Soul conversations to understand that another unresolved issue existed under the extra weight I was carrying. I realize now that even though I've had the kind of career that brings with it an element of power, versions of my childhood abuser continually showed up in my life, disguised in other forms. This person might have been wearing a skirt or a different pair of pants, but the same relationship dynamic was there. I allowed abusers to cross boundaries rather than confronting them. My childhood history of physical and sexual abuse conditioned me to be silent in overbearing and uncomfortable situations. I pushed those feelings down with food. Years after I became known in the world, I found myself at my father's house with one of the men who had molested me. I couldn't fully explain it to myself at the time, but there I was, in the kitchen, making eggs for him. He told me he liked his eggs over easy, and I thought, oh my God, I'm standing here making eggs for this man who abused me, and I don't even know why I'm in the room. Looking back, this was a seminal moment for me. I reverted to the silence of my 9-year-old girl self, who thought that speaking up would cause me to be blamed. It has finally clicked that this type of compliant relationship has replayed over and over in both my personal and professional life. If I ever became upset about something rather than speaking out, I reverted to the silence of that 9-year-old girl, just like I did years later by making those eggs for a man who had molested me. I finally realized if I was ever going to establish a healthy relationship with my weight, the key was to confront whatever needed confrontation instead of suppressing and eating it. Making that connection feels like a light bulb has finally been switched on, a whole room full of them. Aha! Not only have I broken open, I've broken through. Shedding the weight now isn't about meeting goals on the scale or fitting into a dress. It means allowing myself to tell the truth and live in truth on every level, especially when I'm not happy about something. I have claimed my own freedom by telling people what I really feel at all times, even if it means the end of a relationship. For anyone living with layers of shame, suppression, or secrecy, certain triggers may force you to confront all of those feelings you've kept at arm's length. So many spiritual teachers have shared on Supersoul how our greatest epiphanies reveal themselves in times of deep turmoil and despair. Losing a job, addiction, a breakup, the death of a loved one, illness, these are the types of struggles that can just break us wide open. Best-selling author of Eat, Pray, Love and frequent Supersoul Sunday guest Elizabeth Gilbert calls these bathroom floor moments. Others call them dark nights of the soul. Before you start looking outside yourself asking, why me? Why me? Why me? Understand that nothing is happening out of order with you. Your life is always speaking to you. Just like my weight was constantly reminding me of what I thought I had resolved. When that reckoning comes for you, remember, it's really your life trying to push you in another direction. The universe is opening the door to your next great journey. And know this for sure, no experience you've ever had is wasted. Challenges provide opportunities that force us to search for a new center of gravity. Don't resist. Resistance only causes more struggle. You can't win if you're fighting the truth. Instead, persist in finding and letting it break you open. When we talked about doing an audiobook, I knew the chapter on breaking open belonged to Iyanla Van Zandt. We called this conversation Finding Peace from Broken Pieces. And it is a masterwork in how to release yourself from the pain of the past and move forward with light-filled freedom.
You are my first guest on this set.
Yeah. Honored.
Honored.
Honored. It's big. It's beautiful.
Well, you know, what we're trying to do with this network is actually
the heart and soul of what Super Soul Sunday is all about. And I am so honored to have you to be a part of that, because from day one, you understood that that's what I was trying to do. I read all of your Facebook posts, and people have been saying on Facebook, you know, I love Super Soul Sunday, I get this, but how do I make it real in my own life? And something you shared on a life class recently from A Course in Miracles, all lessons
all
are...
all things the lessons that God would have you learn.
Now, don't you think that that is fundamental?
Yes.
In people being able to take the spiritual and making it operational?
Yeah.
Once you realize that there is nothing happening...
That God isn't in.
That God isn't in.
Everything. Your breakdown with boo-boo.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, let's start here. What is your definition of God then? Because
all there is. That's my definition. All there is. Everything. All there is. Took me a long time to learn that. Mm-hmm. Because that's what that I had God, but when you were acting ugly, you didn't have none.
You were one of those people.
One of them. I was one of them. I grew up believing that I was wretched, born in sin, and that I was headed straight for hell.
Yes.
Because I wanted to polish my fingernails.
Yes. And all of the... Do you know... Yes. Do you know... my sister, who I discovered just last year, she was telling me the story that when she was taken to her home and finally adopted, this makes me want to weep, that the very first day she arrives on the step as a seven-year-old girl, a little girl comes from next door and wants to play with her, takes her to her house and paints her fingernails, and she was beaten by her adoptive mother that day because her fingernails were painted. I don't know a God that wants to beat you because your fingernails are polished.
Well, I don't know a God that wants you to suffer and be wretched. I don't know a God that doesn't forgive
you. That won't let you in heaven because you're wearing pants.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but they didn't know any better.
I call it God in a box.
Yeah, God in a box.
And
churchianity.
Churchianity. What is that?
It's when you go to the church and you do all of the religious ceremonies and rituals and everything, and you think that is what's going to build your intimate, your relationship with God.
Yeah.
And then you go home and you mean it in a wet cat. You're miserable in your spirit.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
do the prayer, you do the everything in church, and you try to bring church home, but church wears off around 6 p.m. on Tuesday.
You know. I know.
And let me say, I love the Lord, I love church, but there's a truth here that's not being told. It's just not being told, which is God wants an intimate relationship with you, whether you do it at First AME or St. Martha's, or whether you do it in your heart. God wants you to smile at other people because that's a demonstration of love if you've never opened the Bible. God wants you to be good in your soul and your spirit and trust God for every step, whether or not you sing in a choir.
Yeah. Now, on page 136, my relationship with God was hit and miss at best. My marriage was on the verge of being a mess. My relationship with myself was a complete disaster, and I was slated to appear on Oprah to talk about things that I was still trying to master myself. The reason I love this so much is because when your relationship with God is hit or miss,
yeah,
so is your life.
That's right. And I had become spiritually lazy. And I talk about that. I had let the ways of the world so occupy me. I got to be up at 6. I got to be here. I got to do this. I got to do that. And I made time for everything, the husband, the kids, whatever. And I said, okay, I'll pray tomorrow. You know, or, okay, I don't have time right now to read the scripture.
Yeah.
Or
I don't have time for meditation.
I can't be still. I can't pause.
Yeah.
You know, and then I realized, and this happened to me on the plane coming here.
Yes.
The plane pulled back, backed out, pulled into the runway, got to the end of the runway to take off, and you know what it did? It stopped. I said, even this great big old plane takes a pause before it takes off.
Wow.
On the plane, I love God, because God will bring you stuff like that. Now, that was a deep lesson. I'm on the plane just a weeping.
I get that.
I'm so sorry I haven't paused.
You know how the lesson came to me? It came to me several years ago. I had gotten 3 golden retrievers at one time, and I had Luke, Layla, and Gracie. And Gracie was a dog who never paused. She was always, you know, we were always, always the question, where is Gracie? Where is Gracie? Where's Gracie? And one day, Gracie went out, and the caretaker for Gracie was playing ball. The ball got stuck in Gracie's mouth, and Gracie died. The instant I saw Gracie, and I come running, they go, you know, Miss Winfrey, something's happened to one of the dogs. The instant I saw Gracie lying on the ground, I knew that that would be me if I didn't slow
down. That's right. Oh, wow. Yeah, you got it on the plane. Gracie brought, Grace brought it to you.
Yes, Gracie was a moment of grace. I just, the instant I saw the dog, I thought, that's going to be you.
And see, that is how life operates when you are willing and when you are open. Who would have thought that your dead dog would be a message to you?
Yes.
Who would have thought that sitting at the end of the roadway?
Yeah.
And what's happening in our world is people are having more and more of these aha moments, more and more of these realizations.
But I think people, the reason we have this kind of forum is so that people can begin to trust the messages.
And know that it's happening and you must trust them. You must pay attention. You must pay attention.
So for people who are on the path to trying to discover why they are where they are, trying to come to some sense of self-awareness, trying to move forward, it's important to understand what the past gave to you.
As much as you can, but the way you can tell what the past gave to you is look at your patterns.
Yeah.
Look at what you do. You don't have to look at your mama. Just be clear about what you do. Pause and pay attention. And now here was the real kicker for me is my mother, my natural birth mother, was dead and nobody bothered to tell me. So I didn't have that portion of my history. And my stepmother was a traditional, quiet, you know, don't talk about that kind of thing. And so no, I didn't even know the truth. So I was living a lie for so long. And that's what I did in my own life. I lived many lies. I'm happy at home. I feel good. Oh, everything is wonderful. I was living a lie.
And that is why you're so able to call it out. Because
I smell
you see it. Yes.
I can smell a lie a foot away.
Yeah.
You know, people always say to me, how did you know that? God told me.
You say that you are, I read this, that you're not a clairvoyant, but you're clairhearent.
Clairaudient. Yeah. I do hear.
Yeah.
I hear beneath the words. And it sometimes gets
I noticed
me in
you
trouble.
Doing it in life class with that woman who was sitting right over there. She yeah. stood up and you said, what I hear you saying. And I was saying, I don't hear saying, I hear saying what she just said.
Okay. So tell the truth, boo. Tell the truth.
And you said, what I hear, what I'm hearing
yeah.
is that there are some mother issues.
Yeah.
And I was saying, she didn't
or the
mention her
issue.
Mother.
It's hard sometimes because it's like, I say it's the Holy Spirit will hit me in the back of my head and say that, you know, and it just comes out. And I'm shocked my own self. I'm like, okay, now what you going to do with this?
Yes.
And people hear it. If they're willing and the heart is open and God is on their side, they will receive it.
Yeah.
And I know they receive it. They'll do one or two things. They'll laugh or they'll cry.
Do you think that everything that has happened to you that you write so beautifully and eloquently about, and I can feel the beating of your heart and peace from the broken pieces. Do you think all of that was to bring you to the space where you can
Absolutely.
Where you can be here for people in a way that
Absolutely.
You weren't before?
All things are lessons that God would have me learn.
Uh-huh.
And you know how I write about it in the book. I say every Sunday morning, God has a jazz brunch for souls
yes.
becoming human.
Yeah.
And they go to that brunch and God reads out all of the life assignments of humans that are going to be born on earth. And the souls pick an assignment, meaning they pick a life that they're going to come into body to manifest. And God, when he has a really hard task, he winks over at you and says, you know, like, this is the assignment I want you to take.
Yeah.
So the soul that was going to become Rhonda Harris was sitting there at the jazz brunch. And God winked at her. And then he brought her up and he told her, you're going to be born a black female in a time when being black or female isn't really easy. You're going to be born to an alcoholic mother and a womanizing father. You're going to be born in a situation where you may be physically abused. God tells us. He tells us. We get the life assignment. And he says, this is what I want you to know.
I want you to know that you've got to hold on to me.
Yes.
I want you to know that you've got to learn forgiveness. And when I got abandoned and treated badly in home, I didn't remember that I could always reach out to God. But at some point, Oprah, and you know this, those things that God whispered in your ear kick in.
Yeah.
And you get to choose.
Yeah.
Either I'm going to do this as hard as it is, or I'm going to do that. I'm going to pick up a needle. I'm going to stay ignorant. I'm going to drink. I'm going to cuss. I'm going to stay angry. Or I'm going to say, Father, into thy hands I commit me.
Yeah.
My soul, my life.
Yeah.
And that's what I did.
It is understanding the surrender.
Oh, man.
And that really is all there needs to be, is
see,
the surrender.
People think surrender looks like this.
This, yes.
And it looks like
that. Yes, it does.
This is surrender.
It does. It looks like that.
I surrender.
Yeah.
Ooh, good thing it's Sunday.
I know, that was my greatest lesson, surrender. I am telling you, the very first time I read The Course in Miracles, I have to tell you this, I've never shared this before, but the very first time, I was so scared that I was going to be struck by lightning.
The next day, right?
The next day.
Pluck it out my eye.
I took the book out my house. Because I didn't want God to come looking by, wink, and see it there. Mm-hmm. I couldn't figure out how the God that was a jealous God would be accepting of any other ideas about who God could be.
Right.
You know what helped me? What helped me so immensely in this path? I read a book by Eric Butterworth called Discover the Power Within
You. Yeah,
Within
Discover
You. The power and within. That book single-handedly changed the way I saw God.
Yeah.
Yes. It allowed me to have the Jesus of my past and to also make Jesus bigger than I ever imagined.
Well, that was easy. Let me tell you.
Introducing the Christ consciousness.
Within.
Yeah.
The first time I saw, experienced what I knew to be God.
Yeah.
It was feminine. It was a woman in the mirror.
Oh.
Standing behind me, said to me, your beauty is within. Really? You know, it was so shocking. Later on.
Well, what was that? A voice in your head?
No, I saw it. And the second time I had the same experience with the same vision, the same apparition, whatever you want to call it, was I had slumped to the floor in my kitchen in the midst of postpartum depression. At 21 years old, where I had taken an overdose of everything that I could put my hands on, and I could feel the life leaking out of my body. And I looked up, and there it was again, and she said to me, do you really want to die? And I said, no, I just don't want to hurt.
Oh.
Next thing I woke up, I was in the psychiatric ward, you know, because when you attempt suicide, they put you in the nut house, you know?
Yeah.
And for me, it was just a pause.
Yeah.
It was too much happening too fast. Just had a baby, two other kids to raise, dog to walk, laundry to do, money to make. It was too much. I was overloaded.
How did you figure out, though, and get the, not just the intellectual training, but the spiritual heart and heat to be able to do what you're now doing on Beyond the Fix My Life?
Well,
Where did you get that from?
I hear it. I just hear it.
But
you know?
But your degree is law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? I didn't go to law school to learn law. I went to law school to train my mind. My mind had not been trained.
Oh.
Law school trained my mind.
Okay.
Trained me how to think, how to analyze, how to see, how to get out of the negativity, how to build an argument.
Mm.
Because in law school, they don't care what you believe. You got to lay that deposition out. You got to align. And that it taught me how to think. And really, law school was, I realized I didn't come to learn man's law. I came to learn God's law.
In law school?
Well, how'd you do? Yeah.
Yeah.
$47,000, yeah.
But where does the spiritual wisdom, the spiritual power come from? How do you know how to do that?
I give myself away moment by moment, moment by moment. There's no intellectual definition for that depth of spiritual unfolding. I just make myself
available to God. And in that moment, when I sense, see, feel, hear it coming, I just give myself away. And I'm just used as the vessel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's deep for me, you know, because I never know what I'm going to say, you know. It's a very powerful state of surrender.
What is your current spiritual practice?
Mm.
Because I know you can't hold the space that you hold
yeah.
without a spiritual. What do you do?
Well, I read the Bible almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
I put the Bible to my head and I open it. And wherever I open it, that's where I'm reading. And I ask for guidance. The other thing I do is music. Music ministers to me. I don't go anywhere without my music. I sent you a song.
Yes.
Yeah, I sent you a song. Music ministers to me, you know. And some I play over and over. Great is thy mercy towards me. Mm-hmm. Your loving kindness. You know, Donnie McClurkin. Yolanda Adams, Just a Prayer.
Oh, my goodness. Great is thy mercy, Donnie.
Okay, yeah. Could you just spit?
Yeah. I could just spit. Download that thing right now. I was listening to that in Maui, and I think it brought me to my knees.
Take you down.
Take
me down. That's what you want. Take you down.
Took me down.
Take me down, Lord. Take me down. Now, I got to go down. One knee, two knee, face in the dirt.
Stop me cold.
Has to. And that one that I sent you.
Yes.
Yeah. Ooh. But listen, it's not just an Eminem.
Yeah.
You only get one shot. Do not miss your chance to blow. Opportunity comes once in a lifetime.
Hello.
Eminem. Music ministers to me. And I take it in and the Holy Spirit translates it for me. And, you know, I didn't know my own strength.
Oh.
I didn't know.
That's another one, yes, yeah.
I didn't know. I didn't know my own strength. I didn't.
Yeah.
And some days I still don't. But.
But I did not crumble.
I didn't crumble.
Yeah.
I crashed down.
Yeah, and I stumbled.
But I did not crumble.
I did not crumble.
So, I look to you.
Do you feel that we're getting better or worse?
Yeah, yeah. 60% of the human family is awake. 60%. But here it is.
Is awake?
Is awake. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But what the news reports are the sleeping lunatics. Okay? So, you see this? See this?
Yeah.
This thing right here is about 40 years old. I had a thing. I don't know what you call it. Let's call it something. Let's call it a growth. And so when they took it out, they had to cut it.
Yeah.
And it bled. Then they took the thing out and they stitched it up.
Mm-hmm.
And when I looked at it, it was horrible. The stitches, it was oozing. It was very painful. Now look at it. The scar is there, but I don't remember the pain. What we're looking at in the world now is the cut thing with the stitches. Because we know that what we've been doing it the way we're doing it isn't working. So we're looking at the poison is coming out. And that's hurtful. It's painful. It's ugly as the day is long.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But 20 years, 30 years from now, all we'll see is the scar.
Yeah.
The pain will be gone.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be all cleaned up. That's where we are. We're looking at the oozy nastiness. It's okay.
In the world.
In the world.
In the world.
In the family, in the relationships.
And the fact that we can sit here on a Sunday morning mm-hmm. and people watch us on Facebook and watch us on the web, over.com, and watch us on the OWN channel and all over the world means that there is a gathering of like-minded people.
You know, if we believe that the darkness, the evil, the ego, the devil, whatever you want to call it, is going to win, then we cannot believe in God. We can't believe in God and think that the darkness is going to win. Then we just all just need to lay out naked right now. Take me now, Lord. Take me now. You know, how can we really believe that? I will not believe that the darkness is going to win. I will not believe it. I believe that the only thing that's going to dispel the darkness, boop, is for the light to come on.
Yeah.
And the lights are coming on. Boop, boop, boop. Here, there. People eating more vegetables, living green, taking in saving animals. All of that is the light coming on.
What is the soul? What is the soul?
The soul, I believe, is the fingerprint of God that becomes a physical body.
Whoa.
I believe that. It's the fingerprint, you know, like if you put it on a piece of paper and it's unique to everybody.
Oh my goodness, does that not touch me in a powerful way? Did you just have that answer waiting?
Yeah.
It's the fingerprint of God
that becomes the physical body. Unique in its own development and expression, but filled with the divinity that is the essence of all that is.
Okay. All right. What is your definition of God?
All that is. Everything. Everything. Breath. Life. Everything. I can't even... Just get Webster's Dictionary, throw it on the floor.
It's everything.
Everything. Everything.
And God is in everything.
God is everything. Not only in, is everything. Everything is God. A manifestation of the presence of God. A manifestation of the nature of God. A manifestation of the need for God. Everything. God is everything.
Okay, because I was going to ask you, when you're looking at darkness, at evil, at things that are undesirable, how is that God? And you're saying it's the manifestation
of the need for God. Yeah. When you're looking at darkness, you know, I told you about that first lesson I read in the Course of Miracles. I am among the ministers of God. So when I'm looking at darkness, I can't run screaming from the room.
Yeah.
I have to know I am among the ministers of God. And what would a minister of God do in the presence of darkness, but bring in the light?
Yeah. And aren't we all among the ministers?
Absolutely.
That's the point.
But we forget.
Yeah,
we keep looking for a minister and not realizing you it, boo. It's
you. Have you always considered yourself a spiritual person, or was there an aha moment when you recognized your connection to something bigger than yourself?
I didn't know what you called it. I'm telling you, I saw the feminine face of God in the mirror. I saw the feminine face of God as I felt the life slipping out of my body. I didn't know what you called it. And coming from a conservative...
But the life slipping out of your body when I suicide.
Was trying to commit suicide. And I didn't know what you call it until one day when I heard it and I said, well, this must be God. And if it ain't, that's what I'm calling it. And so, you know, you become what you believe. So I believe God speaks to me. And when it speaks, I understand. And I said, okay, because the sheep know the voice of the shepherd.
Yeah.
So I didn't need anybody to tell me what kind of sheep I was or what I needed to do. You know, people can talk you in and out of philosophy and theory, but they can't talk you out of your experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And I experienced God's voice in my soul, which was the fingerprint. And the fingerprint came alive. And I said, well, I don't know what this is, but I'm calling it good and I'm calling it God.
Yeah.
God is love. Yeah. I believe in love. Yeah. God is truth. Yeah. I believe in truth.
Yeah.
God is wisdom. I believe in wisdom. God is peace. I believe in peace.
Yeah.
Pick one and stick with it.
Stick with it. That's right. Did you grow up in a religious family?
Oh, yeah. Oh, girl, please. Child. Mm-mm. Yes. We were churchified and religious.
Churchianity, you call it.
Churchianity.
Churchianity, my new word.
Churchianity, yeah. I went to church Sunday, Friday, Wednesday. I knew all of the songs and I knew all of the scriptures and, you know, and I was wretched, born in sin. And if I didn't line up with somebody else's concept of what God was, I was going straight to hell. So I was prepared to go to hell and instead made my life a living hell until I woke up and said, I don't know what that is. It sounds like God to me. I'm going to listen.
How do you define religion versus spirituality?
Religion is the rules, regulations, ceremonies, and rituals developed by man to create conformity and uniformity in the approach to God. Spirituality is God's call in your soul.
Ooh, that's good. Do you consider yourself still a seeker?
Oh, yeah. I'm still a seeker. I will always be a seeker until I take that last breath. Because the minute I think I know it all, I got it all, I won't be fully reliant on God. I won't be a frog, fully reliant on God.
And I got to hop. I got to hop as God calls me. So, yeah, I will always be a seeker. I don't ever want to know it all. In fact, I don't know nothing. I thought I knew, but I was mistaken. Because I didn't have
And
peace.
When you do know in your work, it's when you have
surrendered.
Surrendered.
I give myself away.
Yeah. You can't say that enough because people think surrender is...
Yes. And yeah. And for me, having and Native American blood and African blood and having been to the reservation and understanding the culture and the history of both of those communities from which that I'm from, I understand what surrender looked like and meant to them. For the African, surrender looked like slavery. For the Native American, surrender looked like the reservation. But that's not the kind of surrender God calls us to.
He calls us to open arms.
I give myself away so you can use me.
Whew. What does prayer mean to you?
It means intimate, heartfelt, authentic communication with my boo.
B with the capital B.
B.
Yeah.
God is my boo.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, God
no,
is my
God boo. Is all caps. You're yeah, all caps
all
boo.
Caps. Yeah, my boo. You know, and that's how I do it. I don't mean to be irreverent or disrespectful, but as long as I held God out there as opposed to in here, I don't pray to an external God. I don't pray to an external God. I pray to an internal God. So it's a conversation. Okay, boo, what we going to do here? This is looking real strange. And then there are those moments when I have to say, Father, Father, I just love you today. Mother, I love you today. Mm-hmm. That's for me.
Chapter 8, Grace and Gratitude. The most fundamental lesson that you can take away from Super Soul Sunday is gratitude. Gratitude is its own energy field. When you acknowledge and are grateful for whatever you have, it allows more to be drawn to you and changes the way you experience life. Grace is transformative. The more grateful you are, the more grace mirrors the gratitude that you have. It's been 20 years since I first read Sarah Von Braunick's Simple Abundance and started keeping a gratitude journal. Looking back, I believe it was one of the most important things I've done. I've been keeping diaries since I was 15 years old, but before I began focusing on gratitude, all my diaries were filled with bad poetry and woe is me worries about weight and men and what other people thought about me. I cannot tell you how much my life changed when I started writing down 5 things I was grateful for each day. It sounds simple, but when you go through the day, staying conscious about what you will put on your gratitude list, it completely shifts the lens through which you see the world. Without even realizing it, gratitude opens a fresh new channel within you, a place where the spiritual dimension of your life can flow. As your true self grows in the space of gratefulness, you can't help but feel more alive and receptive to the beauty that surrounds you. And because I believe what we focus on expands, the more we celebrate gratitude, the more blessings come into our lives. Imagine all of this goodness appearing simply by staying still long enough to notice the morning. The sun, a perfect rose, or someone taking the time to hold the door for you. I know it's not easy to be grateful all the time, but I've learned that it's when you feel the least thankful that you're most in need of what gratitude can give you, perspective. It was my soul sister, mother figure, mentor, and friend, Dr. Maya Angelou, who taught me what she believed to be the true purpose of giving thanks. After I called her years ago, upset and in tears over what I thought someone had done to me, she stopped me mid-sob and said, "Stop your crying right now and say thank you." I was confused and asked, "Why?" "Because," she said in that deep, wise Maya Angelou voice, "you know, God put a rainbow in every cloud. The rainbow is coming. Say thank you, even though you can't see the rainbow. It's already there. So many of the great teachers who've joined me on Super Soul Sunday have helped me see how the practice of gratitude can elevate your life to a state of grace. Today, I give thanks for so many things. The breath in my lungs, my body that has carried me to every corner of this magnificent earth, and my universal connection to the source of all things, all knowing, all being, all. As the German mystic Meister Eckhart once said so eloquently, if the only prayer you say in your entire life is thank you, that will be enough. During my Super Soul conversation with spiritual teacher and intuitive Carolyn Mace, she gives one of the clearest examples of how gratitude and grace work in our lives. Talking with Carolyn usually produces an aha moment every minute or so, and this time was no exception.
You stopped to explain what we meant by spirit. Can you do that again for all of our Super Soul family?
I sure can. I think this the way to understand your spirit is that it's the part of you that is seeking meaning and purpose. That's one way someone can relate to that. Another way to understand spirit is that it's the part of you that is drawn to hope. That's one way to understand spirit.
The part of you that is drawn to hope.
Everyone can relate to that.
Right.
The part of your spirit that is simply drawn to hope, that will not give in to despair.
Uh-huh.
The part of you that has to believe in goodness.
Yeah.
That has to believe in something more.
It's the light of you.
It's the light of you.
Yeah.
But light needs to have a word. Like, what does that feel like? It feels like hope.
Feels like hope.
It feels like grace.
Okay,
it feels
that's really
like
clear.
Love.
I got that.
Everyone can get that.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to be hopeless. It's the part that says, no, I got to have hope.
That's a tweetable quote there. Your spirit is a part of you that feels like hope.
Yep. There mm-hmm. it is.
Tweet, tweet.
There it is.
There it is.
There it is.
You say in Anatomy of Spirit, page 170, from a spiritual perspective, in fact, the entire physical world is nothing more than our classroom. But the challenge to each of us in this classroom is, will you make the choices that you make to enhance your spirit or those that drain your power?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that you said that, because I had just earlier today was explaining to someone, that's how I see the world, as this super classroom. And that's why the idea of what we do on this channel, life class, mm-hmm. Using other people's life as a class, using your life as a class is so stimulating to me.
Well, that's the whole, and seeing
so
your
this
whole,
is the Earth School.
It is an Earth School.
Mm-hmm.
It is an Earth School. And if you saw everything about your life as a learning, as a lesson,
yeah.
as I'm looking for truth, I'm looking for, does this drain power? Am I empowering with every choice I make? I'm either choosing to grace somebody or withhold it, to give power or to take it back. If people understand that every single thing, I'm either going to learn something from this or I'm not.
So every single choice we make is either going to enhance the spirit.
That's right.
Or it's going to drain
totally
the spirit.
There's nothing in between. There is nothing in between. What one choice? Well, give me one choice that could be in between. There isn't.
There isn't.
There isn't.
Another way to say that is you're either walking in the direction of love or you're walking away
totally.
From it. You're walking to fear, right?
And there is no other choice.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you're in a grocery store and you're thinking, should I buy this or not? And your gut says, you can't eat that.
Mm-hmm.
And you decide, I'm not going to listen to that voice. Right there, even in that tiny thing, you've walked toward fear.
Wow.
Because you've blocked your intuitive voice.
So every day, in the smallest of ways and the largest of ways, we're either giving ourselves power or taking away from it. I get that. You said back in 1998, I'm not born here to have a personality. I'm born here to have a spirit. And you say that each of us is born with a purpose for being alive. You call that, and actually wrote a book called Sacred Contracts.
Right. The sacred contract is the reason you were born.
Mm-hmm.
Then if it is the reason you were born, why are so many people confused about what the contract says?
Because you know what? It's first. A contract's not a literal document.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing we have to understand.
Right.
Our sacred contract is what we could think of as a spiritual document that our soul recognizes, okay?
I love that. A spiritual document that our soul recognizes.
You know how we say things like, I just have to be true to myself.
Self, yes, yeah.
And if someone said, you know, like, what does that mean? You say, there's something I know I was meant to do. There's something I know. I mean, Abraham Lincoln felt that way. Mm-hmm. All these great people who've always said, there's something
I know
I was meant to do. That knowingness is what the soul understands. I was born and it was for a purpose. You have agreements, fundamental agreements that you simply feel. You can't put your finger on them because they reveal themselves to you within the context of your life through coincidence, through synchronicity,
mm-hmm.
through obligations you can't get out of,
mm-hmm.
through mad love you can't stop no matter what you do.
That was your sacred contract.
These are all parts of it.
Parts of your sacred contract.
All parts of it that together form the whole of your contract. Yeah.
You say many people are confused or completely in the dark about their reason for living.
Right.
That's what I was saying. How can you be so confused about your reason for being here?
You know why? Because they define it by what they want versus what they have.
Oh, this is the thing that you say that I love the most. Well, lots of things I love the most, but okay. You say that people suffer when they pursue a life or chase a dream that doesn't belong to them.
There you go.
There it is.
There it is.
There you go. You said it.
You know, I mean, yeah.
Explain okay. What you mean by that, though. I thought that was so profound.
Absolutely. Well, you know, people get fixated on something and they have to have it or they...
Especially in this culture of literally American Idol.
Exactly. American Idol. Even the name.
The very idea of that.
Something that you doesn't belong to you. That life doesn't belong to you.
Yes.
But in our society, we're taught to imitate something, to want something that doesn't belong to us.
And that is what causes the suffering.
And yes.
Because you're pursuing a life that really even wasn't meant for you.
Right.
So then the question becomes, how do you know when you are on the right path? And what dream belongs to you, or what husband belongs to you, or what job belongs to you?
You know you're on the right path. Here's your clue. You're not put in a position to betray yourself. You don't betray yourself anymore. You're not put in a position where you feel like you have to negotiate your sense of integrity, which is an act of betrayal. Your heart, an act of betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel like you have to compromise who you are.
Mm-hmm.
It feels right.
You can fully, I got that. It's like if you're at a job, you know you're really gifted and talented. People are not paying you for what you value yourself to be. You come into work every day feeling like I'm really not valued. I'm not being respected for what I do, or my boss is unkind, or whatever the situation
right.
might be. There's an unease with you.
That's right.
Yeah. And so when you have more respect for yourself, put yourself in a position where you can feel your sense of value or worth,
right.
that turns around.
That's right.
And that's how you know.
You know because you don't feel like this isn't costing me my power. This isn't costing me my psyche. This isn't costing me my soul.
Okay, this is really good.
This isn't costing me my sense of... I don't feel confused in some deep level. I'm not drained. I can be tired after a day's work, but I'm not psychically drained where I feel like I'm losing life.
And losing myself.
And losing myself.
That's what a lot of people say, I'm losing myself. Okay.
Why? Because I'm betraying myself in some way.
What is the difference? Because
I have a lot of married friends. I've interviewed a lot of people over the years who are married, and everybody talks about how difficult, how, you know, it's work, a relationship is work, it's work, it's work. What is the difference between betraying yourself and compromising? Because that's what you have to do to get along.
I'd say that a compromise.
Mm-hmm.
Compromise is when you willingly, and out of love, say, that's all right, a little this, little that, little this, little that. But in a compromise, you don't go away feeling like I've betrayed myself. I've betrayed myself. I've allowed myself, I've put poison in my mouth here.
Okay, it goes back to exactly what you said earlier, that every choice is either going to enhance your spirit or it's going to drain your spirit.
Right.
So if you have been compromised to the point where you feel drained or depleted, then you've betrayed yourself.
You have.
I mean,
the numbers of times someone will say to themselves, I want to get out of this circumstance, but I'm too afraid to take care of myself. So I will lie about how happy I am in this marriage. I will put up a front. I will lie about this. But they're betraying everything that's in their heart. They're betraying everything. When they say to me, am I on the right path? Here's what's true. You're on your right path. You're just not managing it that well right now.
You're never on the wrong path?
You're never on the wrong path. You're just not managing it well. You're making choices that are harming you.
Uh-huh.
And that's why it's hurting right now. You're making unwise choices, and your intuition is trying to tell you that.
You're making unwise choices, including the path that you're on right now.
Right, and the way you're managing the path you're on, and it's harming you.
Okay.
And when your life path begins to harm you, then we have to sit back and say, you've taken a detour.
You know, I just had an aha listening to you. I love it when that happens to me. I've often thought that and it's because of your use of the word betrayal. I've often thought, having experienced being betrayed by a close member of my family years ago, thinking that was the worst, that there's nothing worse than being betrayed. And just hearing you talk about it today, I think there's nothing worse than betraying yourself. That the worst, most ultimate betrayal is the betrayal to yourself.
You're right.
Yeah.
Especially conscious. When you have an opportunity to protect yourself.
Yes.
And you choose otherwise. Oh, that's hard. That is hard. That's brutal. You're right.
And it's brutal because it's you saying to God, saying to the forces, to universal energy, that you're not worth protecting.
I think in some cases you're saying you're not worth protecting, and the other one is saying, you are no different than the people who hurt you.
Big, big.
What's the difference between those people who hurt you and what you are doing to yourself?
That is big. How does grace work?
Works like this.
This is good. We're going to get the answer to that question.
Do you ever have that in an argument with someone where you got so fired up and you thought, ooh, I could just say this.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the voice said, you sure you want to do that?
Yeah.
You sure you want to say that?
Yeah.
Because it's a game changer if you say that.
Yeah, that's
right. Grace.
That's grace.
The grace that comes in and says,
yeah, don't say that because you can never take it back.
You can never take it back.
Yeah. There's some places in an argument, everybody who's married knows this.
The voice that comes in and says, I'm going to prevent you from doing something really ruinous right now. That's grace. Here's grace. Grace is the kind of thing that comes in and says, you'll be all right, and goes away. Grace is the kind of thing that says, put your hand on that person just for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And you could feel an energy go through you and an energy calm them down.
Yep.
And it doesn't give you an explanation.
No.
It just says, when you are flushed with worry and you think, am I going to be all right? And then you suddenly know, yes. Yes, you are.
Okay. Now, I tend to think I live in the space of grace. I just feel that I just feel that I'm flooded with it all the time. I see it all the time. I literally see it all the time. And then sometimes exactly what you described also happens. But I feel that, are we not in a constant state of grace?
Grace is a power that comes in and transforms a moment to something better.
Ooh, love that.
Okay?
Yeah.
It transforms this moment to something better, and it takes us with it.
So let's talk about prayer. What does the word prayer mean to you?
Oh, I love prayer so much. It's an inner mystical awakening. To me, prayer is so many things. Oprah, prayer is dialogue with God.
Mm.
Okay? It's not petition. You know, most people know prayer through petition prayer.
Yeah.
Can I have? Can I want?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, can I have more stuff?
Yeah.
Where's my stuff? But that's not really
the
holiness of prayer. Prayer is when you withdraw from your five senses. I closed my eyes and I closed my ears and I withdraw. And I go into a world where rational thought no longer commands and distracts my intellect.
Where rational thought
no longer commands me.
Okay.
Where I go inside and I think about, like, there's a Catholic saint I'm very enchanted by, named Teresa of Avila. Here's one of her prayers. Hover over me, God.
Hover.
Hover over me, God. Remind me you're there. Hover over me, God.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need more than that. What that does is it just reminds me of everything. Reminds me, be kind to that person. Be kind. Kindness is much better than anything else. Be kind.
Yeah. You know, my favorite line is actually from Marianne Williamson in her daily prayer. I think it's called a morning prayer from Illuminata. And there's a line that says, please enter where you already abide.
Right.
Yeah.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah. Please enter where you already
Absolutely.
Abide. So isn't it interesting that I hear that people say to you all the time, can you give me a prayer?
Can you give me a prayer that works? That works. You got something here that works. Right. They want magic.
Yeah.
They want magic. They want to take what they have and they want to get what they want. And prayer is truly saying, you know, there's a lot more pain that comes from answered prayers than unanswered ones. I got news for you.
How so?
Because if people really got what they wanted, they would be in deep grief. This is why, you know how they say, be careful what you pray for?
Yes.
You might get it.
Yes.
There is a lot of wisdom to saying, I trust. I just trust. I don't know what is in my own best interest.
No judgment,
no expectation, and give up the need to know why things happen as they do.
What is the difference between I'm going to accept and not resist? Because I have learned that what you resist only shows up more.
That's right.
Yeah, you're just building the muscle for that thing that you don't want. What is the difference between knowing how to surrender the thing and knowing when to surrender
and doing nothing?
And doing nothing.
A person has to try. A person has to put their energy into their own life and their own effort. You have to do that.
Yeah.
We have an intuitive voice in us. We are born intuitive. We are so intuitive that it's actually, for most people, the source of their greatest suffering. All right. That inner guidance tells us...
I'm just going to let you... I don't even know what you mean by that. How is your intuition, your intuitiveness... The cause of your greatest suffering, I think, would be the opposite.
Oh, no.
No?
No, it isn't, Oprah. It's actually the source of people's greatest suffering.
Why?
Because people hear when they've betrayed themselves. People are very much aware when they are not honest with themselves.
Okay.
People, it's that voice that says, you shouldn't have said that. You know that's not right.
Or... you're still with this person, and you know you should have left 20 years ago. Yeah.
This is the voice of your conscience. It's the voice of your consciousness. It's the voice of your gut instinct. It's the voice you don't want to hear that never turns off.
Okay.
And when you follow this voice and you push, this is the part that says you should push and you should do this. So it's the part that keeps us moving and turning the wheel of our life. It's also the part that says you've done as much as you could now. This is it. You've done everything you can.